was in love with the lake came from living on the shore and going through all the emotions of what it's like to, you know, be a human being and, you know, take in the energy and the sights and the life that is on the shore there. I love to combine the love and emotion with nature, because that's where I feel my own emotions most heightened, is when I'm in nature and especially by lakes. I had been working on the short story for a while and I edited it and then I did the voiceover. When I proposed that piece to Hyde, I was saying, you know, I have this piece that I've been working on that is a short story, but it's sort of, it's like a mild erotica. She was all for it. Hyde's not scared. That was very exciting for me to be able to merge my storytelling, which is, you know, part of the heritage, Anishinaabe heritage storytelling. And I kind of take it in my own route with that. But I'm definitely, you know, inspired and influenced by all the stories that I've heard growing up. I feel like good art, you know, it might, for me, like if it doesn't make me a little nervous to have other people see it, then what am I doing it for, I guess?
Explain how your specific traditions or symbols you are revitalizing or reinterpreting in a modern context through your work.
The inspiration for the Clay Woman Falls in Love with the Lake, that's heavily influenced by stories of Wayne Abuju. That's one of the traditions, the oral telling traditions that I wanted to bring into the medium of the video. I call it like a video tale. So it's like bringing in an oral storytelling and then pairing it with images of the natural world.
What are the rewards and challenges of being an Indigenous artist in the current art world?
Well, the reward is that it's deeply gratifying. It's also healing. It's medicine. All my art forms have a different kind of healing that they bring into my life. Beadwork is very calming. And when I need to expand my mind with writing, that's when I do some writing. Being a self-employed creative is definitely a hustle. And sometimes it gets scary, you know, because you don't know if you're going to be able to pay your bill. Another reward is that, you know, if you keep at it like you do, and that's very rewarding to be able to, you know, live, put food on your table and by doing what you love. I'm excited to make more video tales for one thing. And I have a few books in the works, a sci-fi rom-com and a paranormal rom-com. Also stories from the shore of Lake Superior. Right now, one of the projects that I'm working on is called Kid Epicurious. And it's a wild food adventure comic picture book that should be done by the end of the year.
That's all for this week's episode. Join us next time for more voices and stories that inform, uplift, and shape our communities right here on Minnesota Native News. Minnesota Native News is produced by AMPERS, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, made possible by funding from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
For someone that maybe lacked grandparents growing up and not hearing deep, rich community stories, I had to be very intentional to find that information. And it started with a really simple question: where does Upper Sioux come from? Because I didn't know. But that was like the genesis of everything I've come to know about history, the legalese around treaties.
Buju, hello. Welcome to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. I'm your host, Leah Lem.
And I'm your other host, Co-Primo. Meet Gwait for joining us today. Native Lights is more than a podcast and radio show. At its core, it's a place for Native folks to tell their stories. Each and every week, we have captivating conversations with great guests from a whole lot of different backgrounds. We're talking musicians, artists, community leaders, you name it. They have a wonderful mixture of passions, and we talk to them about their passions and gifts and how they share their gifts with the community. And it centers around the big point of purpose in our lives. Let's continue amplifying Native voices today. What's going on, Leah?
Absolutely. Another day.
Mm-hmm. I'm
super excited to be back at it again.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on? I don't know.
I know. It's been a while.
I think I'm doing well.
Yeah.
Hanging in there. Lots of stuff to do. Lots of news. Lots of things going on in the world. So just trying to keep up.
Lots of news, huh? Never. Never.
Just trying to keep up. How about you?
I've been away from the news grind for a little bit. I was fortunate enough to get some time away from the full-time gig to spend with our nearly nine-month-old, Artem. So it's been a whole different type of stress working with the kiddo. But it's also been, of course, very rewarding.
Mm-hmm.
I've got three more weeks left, and I'm already kind of seeing the work ahead on the horizon and returning to work and all that stuff. So we'll see how that goes.
Oh.
But yeah, we've been good. Maria's back to work.
Are you able to unplug?
To a little bit of a degree. Of course, I got to kind of keep up with at least some current events and not be completely out of my depth when I return. You know, I can't like ask for a recap when I get back or anything. I got to.
Oh, yeah. Last time on What's New in America.
Yeah. And I randomly got into a bunch of horror books. Audiobooks, so I've been kind of getting into that. The Ruins, Bat Eater, Call of Cthulhu.
Ah, Cthulhu.
Downloaded The Terror by Dan Simmons, which is like the shipwreck in the 1800s and just like some monster thing that they're trying to avoid. I just got into it, so I'm not quite sure what's going on, but...
Cool.
I don't know. I don't know why I got into that, but I've been like researching scary audiobooks and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not like
nice.
Life is scary enough. I got to listen to it, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've been jet-setting a little bit, going here and the going there, you
of
know.
Of course.
Bop, bop, bop. So I've been reading a little bit. Latest book I've been reading is Artemis by Andy Weir.
Nice.
Cool book. Takes place on the moon. You know, can't go wrong with a solid plot like that, so.
Did you follow the Artemis mission?
The Artemis mission?
Artemis 2?
I did a little bit, yeah. You know, I'd pop back in and out because I feel like I would have just binged it.
Yeah.
Kept it up on a screen, sitting close to it like a little kid in a TV.
Mm-hmm.
I made sure to check in every now and then. It was really cool. Yeah, I mostly like to read when I travel.
Awesome.
So it's been nice at this point in time to do that.
Yeah. And I like to listen to audiobooks when I'm cleaning and putting away toys. And all those types of good stuff. Current stay-at-home father.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, it's good to be back into it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get into it. Who's our guest today, huh?
I was trying to set you up.
Oh, that's right. I totally...
But I will take it from here.
Classic. Right over my head.
We have a guest on who actually really loves traveling. Mm-hmm. So I will pivot like that. We're excited today to speak with Adam Savariego. He's a citizen of the Upper Sioux community and is the Native American Affairs Advisor with the Minnesota Governor's Office. And prior to his current work at the Governor's Office, Adam served on the Upper Sioux Board of Trustees and as the Community Cultural Liaison at Yellow Medicine East High School in Granite Falls, Minnesota, down there in southwest Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
He's also a traveler, a foodie, and a cat lover. So really excited to talk with him today.
Yep.
Let's welcome him to the show. Hello, Adam.
Bonjour.
Hello.
Thanks for being on with us.
All right. Bonjour, Adam. Could you please just start by introducing yourself and, you know, letting us know where you're joining us from?
Hamadakiapi chante wishte chuzarapido. Adam hemido ka Dakota ya chaze pampanho washte makiapido ka pujutazizi okapi. Hematahando ka Edwati ka Edomowapido. Said hello, my relatives. Greet the handshake from the heart. I am Adam. My Dakota name is Pompanhowashte, which roughly translates to I cry out in a good way that catches people's attention. That's one interpretation. There's a few other ones. I live, I'm from, and I'm enrolled at a place where we dig the Yellow Medicine, also known as Upper Sioux Community. Located just southwest of Grand Falls, Minnesota, in southwest Minnesota.
Awesome. So how are you doing? How's the family?
I got a big family. I have six sisters,
two that are under the age of 18 and four other sisters, you know, living independent lives, some with kids, some nieces and nephews, and, you know, two healthy parents, fortunately. So overall, my family's doing pretty good, I would say.
Great. Well, thanks for that, Adam. We like to kick off our conversation by just seeing what's on your mind. Cole and I were talking about some books we were reading, things like that. But is there anything that's on your mind?
I'm happy the weather's nice. I coach track. I'm very happy when there's nice days out and we can actually be productive outside.
What is the track season?
Usually early March till end of May. Sometimes June if you have athletes make it through the section and get to the state level.
Mm-hmm. Did you run track?
I did. It turned into my favorite sport by my senior year because I guess the fruits of your labor you could actually see individually. Mm. I loved playing basketball as well, but I got a knack for track and like I was pretty competitive, at least at the section level.
Mm-hmm.
And I started coaching 2020 during COVID. The part that really, I guess, fulfilled me there was every year we've always had a handful of tribal members join. And these were young people who I've known since, you know, running around on the res at 5, 6, 7 years old and then seeing them grow into young adults and then now coaching them in a sport that was really fun and fulfilling for me.
Mm-hmm. And is this at Yellow Medicine East High School?
Yep, they'd be at Yellow Medicine East High School.
Great. And then do you still run? I ask as a past runner who is lapsed at the moment.
Regrettably, for the first time in my life, the past year and a half, I have not been able to run.
Mm.
Between 2019 and 2025, I did 3 marathons.
Mm-hmm.
Between 2024 and 2025, I did 2 of those marathons. And I kind of maybe caused some long-term damage in my heel, some plantar fasciitis I've been dealing with. So
ouch.
Hardcore serious running, I've kind of put to the side while I try to rehab that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can teach those students a good lesson there with that.
You're listening to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. Native Lights is produced by Minnesota Native News and Ampers with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Today, we're speaking with Adam Savariego, citizen of the Upper Sioux community, who is the Native American Affairs Advisor with the Minnesota Governor's Office. Prior to his current work in the governor's office, Adam served on the Upper Sioux Board of Trustees and as the community cultural liaison at Yellow Medicine East High School in
Granite
Falls,
Minnesota. Why
don't
you give us a little overview, Adam, of what you do now and what you do at the governor's office there?
So yeah, I work for the state of Minnesota for the office of Governor Tim Walz and Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. My previous title was Native American Affairs Coordinator. So a lot of like logistics planning with the 11 tribal nations bordered and bounded by the state of Minnesota. They changed my title to Native American Affairs Advisor, as at the time I lacked a director, and I guess I just picked up other responsibilities of helping advise policy agencies, so on and so forth. But the primary job really is embedded in state statute 1065, the tribal consultation policy that is a state law that adheres agencies to tribal consultation, especially if there's tribal implications to policy. So part of my job is I help oversee that, advise tribal liaisons that are employed by the state engaging in that work on behalf of their agency. Kind of the broad overview, there's so many other details and nuances that I've come to learn, you know, working in the office. But the principle of it is, you know, upholding and uplifting tribal sovereignty.
Yeah. And for folks who don't know, can you say a bit about what that policy is?
The 1065?
Yeah.
State statute 1065 is for named agencies that are part of the state of Minnesota system. They have to develop a consultation policy and ideally have a tribal liaison to engage in tribal consultation work.
Mm-hmm. So like the Minnesota DNR?
Yep. DNR.
Department of Transportation.
DOT. Yep. Agencies such as that. Especially when those agencies are engaging in work close to individual tribes and or will have tribal impacts. That state statute ensures that the tribe is consulted with when it comes to items that may have impacts on their or close to their tribal lands. and or their tribal members. And it's in respect to a government-to-government relationship.
All right, so this is where I ask, you can go into as much detail as you want or just pass on the question, but could you talk about a specific example of something that you've done that you're proud of in this position working at the governor's office?
I think something that's very public that I was proud to be a part of, and it only involves my current job because this office that I work for now helped facilitate some of those conversations with my tribe when I was on tribal council. We had a nearby state park for years that the tribal council, elders, the tribe, and Upper Sioux community advocated for that land return, especially because it was adjacent to tribal lands. And through that tribal consultation with the DNR, because it was under the jurisdiction of the DNR, again, after years of requests of that ideal, like that land in principle should be returned, both for practical and philosophical reasons, I was able to be part of the team, I guess, on tribal council to see that through. Regardless if I was there or not, it would have happened. I was just really happy to be part of that leadership to see it happen. But, you know, through that state statute 1065, those direct conversations between the tribe and the agency would have never existed. And I think that's a really good example, again, that's publicly known that took place in 2023. Of that land being returned to the tribe.
Adam, I know the chairman had mentioned that that process had been going on for a long time. Decades, even? 20 years, something like that?
Correct, yeah.
20 plus years? Would you say in part or that this policy of government-to-government relationship kind of brought it over the finish line then? Help to bring it over the finish line?
Yeah, the answer is probably yes. I mean, there's a lot of things that fell in place to allow it to happen beyond just that policy. But to be able to have that consultation with the DNR and the tribe's one request was the same thing every year, at least for the record, you know, showed consistency of the tribe's position, even though that was the tribe's position long before the policy. And beyond just the 20 years, right, you're talking all the way back to 1862 when you have treaty considerations with the Traverse des Sioux treaties that took place in 1851. So a long-standing request that my little sliver of life was able to be a part of.
What led you to working in the governor's office?
Wait, was this your dream?
Things just kind of worked out the way they did. I served council for 4 years as secretary, and it was a very fulfilling job, you know, to work on behalf of my people and be honored for them to, you know, elect me to uphold that responsibility. I guess at my age, you know, I just made a decision like I didn't want to continue doing this right now. And I kid you not, I didn't have a plan for what I was going to do after. I've always left it to maybe faith and belief that something will work out. And literally my last week on the job, I just got a general email sent out about a job opening. And I inquired, did I have to live there? Like what the hours look like? And it just seemed like a great opportunity that fit my skill set already. And so I applied, and 2-3 months later, I was selected to work for the governor's office. So literally that's how it worked out.
That's great. Well, you mentioned you had a skill set that could apply to this work. What do you think your gifts are that you bring to the position?
I think to really hit the nail on the head of like what I think my gift is, one, the ability to connect and communicate with people, to be able to hold space, but also to understand both history and present day circumstances, and then how that applies to policy. And then just being able to connect, how do I word this? Like those different portfolios of my lived experience to make it relevant to whatever I'm doing presently. I know I'm speaking very like abstract and philosophical, but like that is how I approach the world, whether it's at track or working in the governor's office. I had the deep gratitude of a wonderful graduate program that taught me how to think and allowed me to be who I was as a person. to explore like what that deep thinking can bring, but then also making it lived and practical in an everyday sense. But something I reference constantly is I have a bachelor's degree in history, and I say that in quotations, taught me how to think, but it gave me an avenue to explore my own tribe's history at a young age. For someone that maybe lacked grandparents growing up and not hearing deep, rich community stories, I had to be very intentional to find that information. And it started with a really simple question: where does Upper Sioux come from? Because I didn't know. And then I started doing research. It led me to the 1930s with the Indian Reorganization Act. It didn't start there. It started prior to that. Well, then you go to Dakota exile, and then the U.S.-Dakota War, the 1851 treaties. And then now you get into the lived cultural and oral stories that have been passed on, that Dakota people have been here for hundreds, if not thousands of years. That question really helped me understand my identity more, but also saw the knowledge gap with not just like my own community members and young people I work with. And I wasn't the only one like asking that question, right? At the time, I was only like 21, 20, and I was unpacking this very rich history and cultural identity, really, that helped me connect more deeply with being a Dakota person, connect with my culture, spirituality, some language. I'm by no means fluent. I like to say I have a vocabulary of a four-year-old and some simple sentence structure, but that was like the genesis of everything I've come to know about history, policy, the legalese around treaties, and those impacts it had, not only on like Upper Sioux, but like all Dakota people, even Dakota people that still are exiled or the reservations are outside of what they may consider their homelands in Minnesota. So, and there's like so much more to unpack there, but I guess to bring it back full circle, like with what my gift is, you know, I've been able to, I guess, articulate all these different types of knowledge and distill it into something that's digestible and practical, both whether it's philosophy, Dakota history, culture, language, whether it's in my current workplace, tribal council, just being a tribal member to a track coach, knowing who you are is like a very important foundation to anything you do. You know, I really believe in being an authentic person. It doesn't sit with me not to be authentic, but then challenging who is that authenticity and who is that person I'm bringing up each and every day, not only for others, but then for myself. And then just trying to be present too, you know, because ultimately that's what it comes down to.
That's great. And you're also an educator.
So the COVID year again, I was approached to teach at Southwest Minnesota State University. I taught there for 3 or 4 years, college level. The principle of like, how do I take all the stuff I've learned over the years and make course content that's both digestible, not triggering, like, I guess, white guilt, for lack of a better term. You get students like that, they get really overwhelmed and guilty. And now it's like, they don't even hear what you're teaching because now they're just blaming themselves. But then when you get Indigenous students, it gets even more complicated because they're navigating that same question. Like, I'm at a university being taught who I am. That doesn't necessarily sit right with me either. So after 3 or 4 years of doing that, I transitioned to the community college in Granite Falls, because really what I wanted to do was teach my own young people from my tribe at the local high school through PSEO. And I did that for 3 years, 2 or 3 years. After those first 2 or 3 years, like enrollment like dropped pretty heavily because I got most of the kids from 10th to 12th grade. And then like new people coming in, it was like only 2 or 3. And so the past year and a half, 2 years, I've done independent studies with young people now. And really that independent study is more of I'm just a guide and they're exploring something that they care about that pertains to them as it pertains to Indigenous history. And more often than not, what does it mean to be Dakota and where does that come from? And they develop a place to just begin answering or trying to find those questions, right? Because you're not going to find answers that validate or fulfill that identity question. But if you can develop a process of exploration around that question, I have a deep belief that they'll carry that for the duration of their life. And when I was 24, 25 doing that, I'm like, the practice of teaching, I didn't know what I was doing. I knew I could convey an idea. And the way I framed questions were never multiple choice. It was open-ended questions, because I really believed in that reflection piece, right? We can learn this history, but what does it mean for today? Or how do you be accountable to this history that hasn't clearly treated Dakota people right in the state of Minnesota? And again, embedded in that philosophy, open-endedness, reflection, you're learning about a group of human people, not the noble savage stereotype of how often Indigenous people get distilled down to.
You're listening to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. Native Lights is produced by Minnesota Native News and Ampers with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Today, we're speaking with Adam Savariego, citizen of the Upper Sioux community, who's the Native American Affairs Advisor with the Minnesota Governor's Office. Prior to his current work at the Governor's Office, Adam served on the Upper Sioux Board of Trustees and as the Community Cultural Liaison at Yellow Medicine East High School in Granite Falls.
What gives you the fuel to continue doing what you're doing? What inspires you to keep going?
When I was 20, I thought I would find an answer to, like, what does it mean to be Dakota? What does it mean to be part of community and tribe? Really, really heavy questions. And I guess now, 10 years later, it's about that relationship, not only with yourself, physical world, people that you're close with, people that seek you out for advice or insight on things. I don't want to be a cliche, but like really just it's about being a good relative and taking that responsibility of the knowledge that I've been able to acquire and be blessed with and be given that knowledge, you know, whether it's from elders, researchers, mentors, and carrying that knowledge both in a lived way, but also in a way that I'm reciprocal to those around me. Whether it's me just being a tribal member, a Dakota person, a track coach, a professor, or working in an office, and just being super mindful of how you share that knowledge and with who you share it with too. But I do believe there's a responsibility to uphold those values in being a good relative to that knowledge itself.
I do want to ask you a bit about travels, because I noticed that you enjoy that. Why don't you tell us a bit about how you caught the travel bug?
When I was really, I don't want to say young, I was like late teenager, early 20s, I started watching this YouTuber named Casey Neistat, who would do the whole travel vlogs. Video is like, I don't want to say inspired me, but like definitely put a like, I could be doing something like this. Probably when I was 20, I did a whim decision to travel to Japan with some friends, and I don't think I fully appreciated it. And then from there, it was just like, oh, this is way easier than I thought. And then that opened the door to like Croatia, Italy, Iceland, Mexico, Hawaii, Sweden. Oh, then Peru last summer. Probably the most memorable experience, because when I went to Croatia, it was part of a study abroad program of looking at youth programs and how the Yugoslavia breakup affected young people. So I was there for like 27 or 28 days. But one of the days we had the privilege of working with three individuals. One was from Turkey, one was from Senegal. And I'm forgetting where the third person was from. But for 3 hours, we broke into three groups, and we worked with that person to create a meal.
You are listening to KFAI, Fresh Air Community Radio, 90.3 FM, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and around the world at KFAI.org. Non-commercial, community-powered radio. Support for Fresh Air Community Radio comes from KFAI listeners, members, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Programming on KFAI is made possible in part through grants from the state of Minnesota.